I'll call this meeting of the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect it is 3:30 p.m. April 13th, and we are in the state capital of Juneau. If you would all just please turn off all cell phones. Members present today, Senator Merrick, Senator Wilkowski, Senator Bjorkman, myself, Chair Kawasaki. Wanted to thank Carrie Cooperrider from Senate Records for taking notes, and Sydney Truitt, the moderator from the Legislative Information Office. On today's agenda, we have three bills up. We are going to hear a second hearing on Senate Bill 71, the pay for the Alaska State Defense Force. We're going to have a first hearing for Senate Bill 119 regarding state ID cards for prisoners in the Department of Corrections. And then we will also have a second hearing on Senate Bill 32, a chokehold ban by Senator L.V. Gray Jackson, who is not quite here yet. First up, we'll take Senate Bill 71. It is sponsored by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. We will have public testimony, look to the will of the committee today. Members do have a draft committee substitute for Senate Bill 71 in your packets, and I just need a motion to adopt the committee substitute as the working document.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move to adopt the committee substitute for Senate Bill 71, Work Draft 33-GS1579-V as our working document.
Thank you, and I'll object for purposes of discussion. We have Joe Hayes, staff to the State Affairs Committee, to explain some changes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, committee members. My name is Joe Hayes, staff to Senator Kawasaki. The changes to Senate Bill 71 from A to B, from page 1, lines 9 to 12 were deleted. Then page 1, line 9 to 10 was amended to add, except as provided in N of this section. And page 1, 2, lines 12 through 3, as a new subsection AS-2305-260N to read, members of the Alaska State Defense Force may receive pay or allowances for training or community service activity, and the source of funding for the pay or allowances and authorization. Page 2, line 15, renumbers the two sections accordingly.
Super. Are there any questions for Mr. Hayes regarding the committee substitute for Senate Bill 71? Okay, hearing none, I will remove my objection to adopting the committee substitute. Are there any further objections? Hearing none, we now have version B as the working document. We have a couple folks here for potentially public testimony. I'll open up public testimony at this time. It looks like we have Angela LaFlame, and I don't know if you're here to testify on behalf of the bill or just bring you up in the close. Okay. And we have OffNet. We have Brenda Carr, representing the Alaska State Defense Force out of North Pole, Alaska. If you'd like to testify today, it says you are. Just state your name and affiliation for the record.
Hi there. My name is Lieutenant Brenda Carr.
Wonderful. And you can go ahead and we won't limit your testimony if you want to just go ahead and give us your public testimony on Senate Bill 71.
All right. Thank you so much for giving me the time. So I am a member of the Alaska State Defense Force. I'm part of the battalion command staff of the 2nd Scouts Battalion. I deal with personnel. Currently we are all volunteers. We do not receive any kind of pay anytime that we go to drill. I mean, obviously that's what this is all about. Or anytime we go on some missions. The only time we get paid is if we're activated for emergency services. We have a lot of very dedicated individuals who are part of our organization. I mean, obviously, you have to be very dedicated for doing this without pay. But it does create a bit of an issue sometimes when certain tasks need to be. We need people to do certain things, but they're like, "Hey, I can't go because I can't afford it. I've got bills to pay, so you can't really leave." Work. One of the things, I recently just came back from a couple of different missions. It was about almost 2 weeks long between the two of them. I mean, fortunately, my work, I get, you know, some vacation time there, and it worked out for me, but doesn't necessarily work out so well for others. We were able to start up a couple of new detachments in Gamble and Savunga. A lot of brand new soldiers in both of those communities. Very few of them have any prior service training. So it's very important for us to be able to get training to these new soldiers and to be able to have either send them to one of our locations or send somebody up there to get them trained, especially where they're at. It's a very sensitive area when it comes to the security of our state. And they are definitely seeing a sizable increase in the amount of activity that is happening there. So, you know, not just for them, but our other communities throughout Western Alaska, it's very important that we get people out there who have experience to train them. But definitely the when they're going out there, you know, for a significant, you know, for a certain amount of time, we're not talking just about, you know, a two-day drill weekend, maybe a week to go help train people. It's kind of hard when you're not getting paid. We do have our bills to pay.
Great. Thank you, Lieutenant Carr. I did have a question. I don't know if you'd be able to answer, but you identified as a member of the Alaska State Defense Force, and you're located in North Pole. Are there other folks that are in the Fairbanks area, Fairbanks, North Scarborough area that you know, or that you work with?
Yes. There's a few of us here in the Fairbanks South area in Delta Junction. We have many different detachments. A lot of our detachments are in rural areas. So we sometimes hope that we can have prior service people in those rural areas, but that's not always the case. So the areas that we don't have prior service, we do need to send people out or have them come in, like to our headquarters in Wasilla for training.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Ms. Carr. And thank you for your testimony, public testimony today. I appreciate your time and appreciate your service. And just for the record, thank you, Senator Merrick provided us a document regarding how many folks are State Defense Force members and their locations. It looks like around 7 in the Fairbanks, North Scarborough area. The big ones are 55 in Wasilla at headquarters and 50 in Kodiak. And sort of like the last person testified, there's some spread throughout the state. Thank you. Let's see, are there any other questions of committee members for Ms. Carr, Lieutenant Carr, who's on the phone? Also in the room, again, we have the legislative liaison for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs, Angela LaFlame. We have, we do have Deputy Commissioner Craig Christensen on the phone as well for questions. And I don't know if there's, I'll just open up public testimony again to anybody else in the room who might want to testify. Okay, hearing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony, and I'd like to bring it back to the committee. Senator Merrick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move CS for Senate Bill 71, Work Draft 33-GS1579/B, be reported out of committee with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Okay, are there any objections? Seeing none, State Affairs Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 71, Work Draft 33-GS1579/B is reported out of committee with individual recommendations and the accompanying fiscal note. We will go ahead and just continue on to the next bill, and we will sign at the conclusion of the meeting. Next up, we have Senate Bill 119. Thank you, folks. Senate Bill 119, this is the first hearing for Senate Bill 119. We have Senator Rob Myers, staff to Senator Rob Myers, awesome man, to present the bill to committee. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Robert Myers, Senator for what is now District Q, North Pole on the eastern side of the Fairbanks North Star Borough. And joining me today is my Chief of Staff, Dawson Mann. Today we're going to be presenting Senate Bill 119, the State Identification Card for Prisoners. Before my aide runs through the sectional analysis for the bill, I just wanted to speak to the sponsor statement quickly, why we're bringing it forward. So at its core, SB 119 is a fairly simple concept that was recently brought to me that provides easier access to identification cards for reentrance upon release and grants the Department of Corrections the statutory authority to issue state IDs to anyone leaving their custody that does not already have an ID in their possession. Possession of a valid form of ID is a critical requirement to gain new employment, apply for housing, open a bank account, pick up prescriptions, and many other activities that are essential to successful reentry into the community. Ensuring reentrants are supported during your transitional period and have access to critical quality of life amenities helps improve community well-being, public safety, and helps avoid recidivism. And with that, Mr. Chair, if you'd like, I could have Mr. Mann go through the sectional.
That'd be great. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Mann.
For the record, Dawson Mann, staff to Senator Myers. Hello, Chair Kawasaki, members of the committee. I will be reading the somewhat brief sectional for this bill. Section 1, AS 1176, 1115C, page 1, lines 8 through 12. This section adds information encoded on the Department of Corrections identification card to the list of confidential information that is prohibited to be obtained illegally. Section 2, AS 1507055E, page 1, line 13, page 2, lines 1 through 10. This section clarifies that an ID issued by the Department of Corrections can be used to register to vote or change voter registration. Section 3, AS 1610267C, page 2, lines 11 through 15. This section adds conforming language that states a fisherman may use a Department of Corrections identification card to verify their identity for a limited entry permit. Section 4, AS 33311A, page 1, lines 16 through 31, page 3, lines 1 through 31, page 4, lines 1 through 31, page 5, lines 1 through 16. This section requires the Department of Corrections to ensure that a prisoner has an identification card in their possession upon release. The Department of Corrections will issue a person an ID if they do not have one, and they will pay the application fee for an identification card issued by the Department of Administration. Section 5, AS 3330.05, page 5, lines 20 to 31, page 6, lines 1 through 23, is a new section, adding the following subsections. AS 3330.05A, the Department of Corrections shall issue an identification card that is identical to a driver's license, except that the card will be a different color and clearly state that the card is for identification purposes only. A1, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections will be assigned distinguishing numbers. A2, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections must include a person's full name, date of birth, physical description, and photograph. Section A3, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections must include a signature. Section A4, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections must have features designed to prevent tampering. Section A5, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections must clearly display that a person is under the age of 21, if applicable. Section A6, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections must clearly state that the individual is restricted from purchasing alcoholic beverages. AS 33.30.05B, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections may not show a person's social security number. AS 33.30.105C, identification cards issued by the Department of Corrections expire 180 days after they are issued or 90 days after the person turns 21, whichever comes first. AS 33.30.105D, a person cannot provide false information in an application for a Department of Corrections identification card
use a fraudulent identification card or allow another person to use their identification card. AS 3330.05E, it is a misdemeanor to violate Section D of AS 33.30.105 in this bill. Section 6, AS 4529.503A, page 6, lines 24 through 31, page 7, lines 1 through 31, page 8, lines 1 through 4, clarifies an identification card issued under AS 33.30.105 is a valid form of ID for financial documents. Section 7, AS 4529.503G, page 8, lines 5 through 10, clarifies that the most recently issued identification card issued by the department is the only valid card. And Section 8, page 8, line 11, this section establishes an effective date for the bill of January 1st, 2024. And Mr. Chairman, if the members of the committee would like, we also have a test copy of the identification card that was provided to us by the department for the members to review. And with that, conclude on the sectional.
And Mr. Chair, while we're open for questions, but we've also got a couple of people from the Department of Corrections, the Commissioner Designee Wilkerson, as well as, Commissioner Designee Winkleman, as well as Deputy Commissioner Wilkerson joining us as well.
Super. Yes, I guess, are there any questions of the sponsor of the bill or Mr. Mann at this time?
No, sir.
I had a question, and if you can, are able to answer it. The identification card, is that ID card, would that ID card be Real ID compliant, or is it not Real ID compliant?
Mr. Chair, it is not Real ID compliant. We did ask about that, and one reason for that is that we're talking about having somebody being released directly out of prison, and so a couple of things you need to be Real ID compliant is you have to be able to provide proof of residence, things like that. Somebody directly coming out of prison doesn't yet have residence or proof of, they wouldn't be able to make it Real ID compliant right away. If they're going to need a Real ID, then they're going to need to take this card down to the DMV. But in order to do that, they have to have housing and proof of housing. In order to have housing, you're going to need a card. So this is one step in the correct direction, at least.
Okay. Are there any other questions for the sponsor of the bill at this time? Okay. Seeing none, we'll go ahead and open up public testimony. We have several people here in the room and one person also off net, so we'll open up public testimony. In the room, I'm not sure how's that you – oh, actually, it says questions only. Does anybody have a question for Commissioner Designee Winkleman or Deputy Commissioner April Wilkerson from the Department of Corrections? Fiscal note question? I actually have a fiscal note question for Ms. Wilkerson since she wrote it. Hello. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Wilkerson. So my question is regarding the fiscal note. It's a zero fiscal note from the agency. The description is that, the description says that you're going to make a good faith effort to ensure the prisoners have an ID card upon release. Is that, never really heard it pointed that way, but is it your intent that all offenders will have an ID upon release?
Good afternoon. For the record, my name is April Wilkerson, Deputy Commissioner for the Corrections. Yes, our intent is that every releasing individual will have an ID, a valid ID. Whether we return their State of Alaska ID that they were booked in or remanded with, as long as it's valid, or we will issue them an ID card upon release.
Okay, good enough. Any questions for Deputy Commissioner Wilkerson? Okay, Hearing none, thank you very much for being here. We do have one person off net, so we will hear from Mr. Garvey from the American Civil Liberties Union in Anchorage. Welcome to the committee. If you state your name and affiliation for that record.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Kawasaki and members of the committee. My name is Michael Garvey, and I'm calling in as Advocacy Director for the American Civil Liberties Union of Alaska from Anchorage. I wanted to thank Senator Myers for introducing this bill. We support efforts to ensure that people returning to their communities from prisons are equipped with valid identification, which is a critical piece of a person's reentry efforts. Too often we hear about people who are released from prison with insufficient identification. In these circumstances, they may not be able to secure safe housing, apply for jobs, establish a consistent mailing address or bank account, have a steady phone number, access health care outside an emergency setting. These are routine day-to-day tasks that we take for granted. Without proper ID, an ID card becomes one more task that a person needs to handle if they are to survive outside of prison. It's in the best interest of incarcerated people and the safety of our communities to guarantee that they have the basic tools needed to succeed and not feel ostracized by society. We are encouraged that Senate Bill 119 recognizes this reality and would increase the corrections commissioner's responsibility to ensure a person has identification when they're released. We would only encourage this committee to make sure that requirements for IDs that are listed in the legislation would not allow for cards to be produced in a way that could identify a person by their incarceration, for instance, by being too unique a color or laid it out in a unique way. But we support this legislation and the intent behind it and appreciate the sponsor for introducing it and for the committee for taking this testimony. We encourage you to support it. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mr. Garvey. Are there any questions for Mr. Garvey at this time? Hearing and seeing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony. Oh, actually, there's a person in the room to testify. If you'd welcome, come forward and then state your name and affiliation for the record, and welcome to committee.
Chair Kawasaki, I did sign up.
It's over there.
First of all, thank you for allowing me a chance to speak. For the record, I'm Don Habiger, and I am a coalition coordinator for the Juno Reentry Coalition. And we've already submitted a letter to the bill sponsor saying we support this legislation, and we do. But I did want to take a little bit of time to emphasize with a story a recent experience that illustrates the need for the bill. In early November, I received a phone call from a gentleman who identified themselves as recently released from Lemon Creek, and they wanted an ID. And so I agreed to help this individual. We met, ran out to DMV, and at that time, he did not have sufficient proof. He lacked a birth certificate. And so back essentially to the emergency shelter, because that's all he could afford, and I'll explain that a little bit. We go, and a month later, with a birth certificate in hand, we go back to DMV. And we thought we had all our documents, a birth certificate, along with a form that the Department of Corrections hands out to each individual releasing. And we were denied again, or he was denied again. And this time, we didn't have proof of address. And so we went back to the emergency shelter, and we get a letterhead on their letterhead just saying this gentleman is staying at the emergency shelter. And so we get that. We go back to DMV. And the third time is the charm, and we get the ID. The significant point of that story, though, is it took a month to get that. And what this individual really wanted to do was go down to the local wire transfer facility, get some cash from their family, and begin to establish himself in Juneau, or re-establish himself in Juneau. So the need is real, and we do have some impediments there to reentry. And whatever we can do as a state to decrease those impediments are certainly important. And that's why the Juneau Reentry Coalition is supporting this bill, and we ask you to pass it out of committee.
Super. Thank you, Mr. Haber. Are there questions? Okay. Hearing and seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Sorry for missing you earlier. We'll go ahead and close public testimony at this time. Bring back Senate Bill 119 to the committee. Are there any further questions for the sponsor of the bill? I have questions offline, but I'll ask those questions of you later. Okay, well, we will go ahead and set Senate Bill 119 aside. And we will take a brief at ease. We're going to call this meeting in the Senate State Affairs Committee to order. Now we will take up Senate Bill 32. This is the second hearing. We have several people who are in the room and online to testify. We have Senator L.V. Gray Jackson and her staff, Bessie Odom, here to provide a quick summary of the bill. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and committee members. This is Senator L.V. Gray Jackson here, and I'm just truly honored that we're having a second hearing and that there are folks online to testify. Police use numerous methods to restrain and limit the movement and overall activity of someone who possesses a danger to themselves or to others, including the police officer. One of the most common restraints are carotid and tracheal choke. Both restraints impede breathing and circulation of blood. If these restraints are used incorrectly, death through asphyxiation may occur. Throughout the United States, there are cases of misuse of chokeholds. Senate Bill 32 would assist in reducing the rate of chokeholds used incorrectly. Senate Bill 32 would further seek to improve police to community relationships by addressing a longstanding issue around use of force. And if I may continue, Mr. Chairman, right now there are many public safety agencies that already prohibit chokeholds. And one of the reasons for me bringing forward this bill, besides the fact that they're already prohibited, is because leadership changes. And when leadership changes, so do the rules and regulations. But if this is in state statute, it would be there in perpetuity. And that is my goal, Mr. Chairman. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Senator Gray Jackson. Are there questions for either the Senator or Ms. Odom today? Okay. We will go ahead and reopen public testimony. We do have one person here in the room and two people online. Public testimony is now open, and if Julie Smith from Fairbanks, Alaska would like to come forward to testify. Welcome, Ms. Smith, to the State Affairs Committee.
Hello, my name is Julie Smith. I'm from Fairbanks, and I am here to support this bill. It is my belief that as public servants, the police should be well trained in order to know their community, so that way they don't feel as afraid when they go into these situations. And they also need to know what the rules are as to how they can interact with the public, since they are serving the public. Allowing police to do things like chokeholds is not something that would be publicly told if any of these police chiefs had moved and the rules had changed. It's not like it's something that the communities would be notified about. So having this as a law would help increase the amount of trust between various communities and the law enforcement in their area. Thank you very much.
Great. Thank you, Ms. Smith. Are there questions for Ms. Smith today? Thank you very much for your testimony this afternoon. We have one person who's here to testify, I'm sorry, online to testify from the City of Bethel Police Department, Mr. Chris Wingner from Bethel. If you could just state your name and affiliation for the record.
I'm sorry, did you say Chris Wingner?
That's what it says on my prompter.
No, I am Leonard Hicks.
Okay. Well, Mr. Hicks, are you the lieutenant from the City of Bethel Police Department?
No, I'm the chief of police.
Oh, okay. Then welcome to the committee. If you could just state your name and your affiliation for the record, and you have a couple minutes to testify on this bill. Thank you.
Yes, my name is Leonard Hicks. I'm the chief of police for the City of Bethel. I'm calling in support of this bill, of this amendment. Frankly, chokeholds used by police officers is a tool that is used, but most departments now see it as a tool that should only be used in situations where deadly force would also be authorized. The way I see it, this amendment simply will require departments to maintain some consistency with their policies and procedures as related to the use of chokeholds. And like they say, as leadership changes occur within the department, these policies will remain due to the fact that they are a statutory requirement within the state.
Okay, thank you. Thank you, Chief. Are there questions of Chief Hicks online with us right now? Okay, thank you very much for standing online, Mr. Hicks. Thank you for your service. We also have Joe Gamash, who's the Executive Director of the Alaska Police Standards Council, who is online for questions. Are there any questions from the committee at this point? Okay. Hearing none, we'll go ahead and close public testimony again. We will go ahead and set this bill aside. Before we close, I'd just like to make a couple of announcements. We are going to have amendments on Senate Bill 119 and Senate Bill 32 to my office by next week. That's 4:20 by close of business. We will conclude our meeting today. Before that, we will also mention that next week we will have the confirmation hearing of Commissioner Designee Jen Winkleman from the Department of Corrections. Mr. Eric Feige, Representative Feige for the Alaska Public Offices Commission. We will hear Senator Merrick's bill, Senate Bill 95 on license plates for specialty organizations, and maybe we will have a hearing on another bill that we've heard previously, under bills previously heard. On Thursday, we will hear from Eric, the group that deals with election fraud issues and making sure that folks aren't voting in two different states. We will also have a hearing potentially on a bill that's coming over from the House relating to e-bikes. So it'll be an exciting week next week. With that, are there any other questions of committee members? All right. We'll go ahead and gavel out this meeting. The meeting is now adjourned at 4:12 p.m.